Yap Squad, welcome back to Yap Sesh Podcast. I'm Sawyer.
I'm Brooke.
Today we are going to talk about something very pertinent and very important. And we also, I hope you tuned in, had an amazing live Star Wars spelling bee, the first of its kind, we think. We're pretty sure. I hope you tuned in for that. If you didn't, you can go back and watch it. We had a lot of wonderful friends and creators in the community join us, and it was really awesome, and we can't wait to do it again next year. So I think without further ado, let's get into this and bring out our wonderful guest. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm sure that a lot of our audience is well acquainted with you and your wonderful content, but Molly, if you'd like to introduce yourself real quick.
Oh, yeah, sure. I guess that would be a good idea. I'm Molly Damon. I'm one half of Star Wars Explained, and I do Star Wars things.
Yes.
Love it. Love it.
And you guys have been creating content for how long now?
Ooh, coming up on 10 years.
Wow. Okay.
Next year will be 10 years.
That's crazy. So, and it's always just been Star Wars?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. Well, there is a lot to talk about. I was going to, were you always, you do a lot of the editing stuff, right?
Bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you always making content with Alex, or were you like behind the scenes?
So when I first started getting more involved, because it kind of just started as something Alex was doing. And for a long time, we both worked full-time jobs outside of doing this. And then as our workload became more and more complicated, I started taking over all the social media. You know, when we first started, we didn't think it was a super big deal to like keep track of all that stuff and post a lot to all the different social media platforms. But as the channel got bigger, I felt like it was more important to start doing that. So I took over that because Alex was terrible at it. So yeah, for a long time, I was just doing social media, community manager type stuff, talking to patrons, things like that. And then I had dabbled in editing a little bit. I've always kind of done things the hard way because I don't want to learn how to do it the fast way. So I'm still learning how to use Adobe Premiere. It's a nightmare every time I use it, but I'm making it work. And yeah, so now I'm editing a lot of our shorts, the Q&As, anything that's going out on social media that isn't YouTube is usually me editing it.
Yeah, I just started using Premiere. Well, when I never made like long form content until this, so I just started using it a couple months ago. And I remember just after I had a friend like, he was like, you know, your first podcast episode wasn't bad, but the editing, and I was like, that is the first time that I have ever used Premiere. And he was like, oh, in that case, it's really, really good. Good job. And then he did a quick little call with me and showed me a couple of really easy tricks. And the next time I went on to edit, I felt like an expert and it had gone through an update. And everything was different.
Don't you love when Adobe does that?
We always ask our guests to bring a topic with them. And when I asked you the other day what you wanted your topic to be, you said?
Being a YouTuber / content creator and the pros, cons, responsibilities of that.
And that, I think, is the most pertinent topic that we could possibly cover right now. I know that we're all very well acquainted with the Star Wars community on Twitter and on YouTube. I I'm personally not on TikTok as much these days just because that platform has changed a lot. Yeah, let's talk about it. But let's talk, I mean, this is something that I think, you know, it's a really great topic, and it's a topic I really like to discuss with my friends because my perspective about content has changed a lot over the past 4 years. And that thing, when you mentioned creator responsibility, I feel like that's a conversation we don't have often enough. So I would love to just kind of talk about content as a whole, you know, what we, you know, how our content has changed over the years, how our involvement with the community has changed over the years. And, you know, also ask some pretty hard-hitting questions, I think, about at what point does content become a community that you've created? And from there, what responsibility do we have as content creators? Because I think that it's important. And I would want our audience to know that, you know, please do not feel discouraged from making content. Don't think that just because you're getting a couple of views here and there, that doesn't mean you're bad at making content. You know, everyone should make content if they want to make content. There is always room for more voices and more perspectives, but it's not as simple as just posting a video and putting it on the internet.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I don't want to sound like the old person in the room, but it's been interesting seeing the content creation world change, because kind of when we started, and then even just before that, you know, TikTok wasn't a thing. That was back with when Vine was a thing, I guess. And it's so interesting to see how like younger generations have grown into this idea of like everyone can be a content creator, everyone can do it and does do it a lot. And it became more and more common to see people doing it for their jobs. And being able to see that start to happen has been really interesting, because now it's like everyone with or without a job is trying to make it, you know, trying to get that viral thing out there. And it's crazy how quickly that has happened.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the early days of YouTube when it was just like people posting videos, and sometimes a video would get a lot of attention. And like, I think about all of those like early viral videos that I still like reference and quote, and to see its evolution into something that people can like turn into a career and monetize it's been so fascinating to see. And like, even in this, just the last couple of years, it's grown exponentially and changed, and expectations are always different. It's a lot.
Yeah. And it is a lot of work. Like I can't tell you how many people we've talked to, and like over the years we tell people what we do and they're like, "Oh, my nephew does that. That's cute." You know? And we're like, yeah, well, I mean, it's a little more complicated, but yeah, I guess you could say it's the same as what your nephew does.
Yeah, I mean, but it's so interesting though. You talk about how, you know, kids these days are feeling anybody can have that viral moment. And I think something that I think there's a lot of truth, but I feel that way. And I'm, you know, I think the youngest person in this call. So, well, I am the youngest person in this call, but, you know, I think that we started to really see an uptick in that when COVID hit. And because that just happened to co-align with the rise of TikTok and the rise of short form content, and this app that was being promised to you is like, anybody can go viral. Anything can become viral. And I know that that's why I joined TikTok. And originally when I joined the platform, my intention was not to make Star Wars content, until a Star Wars video that I made did numbers. And I was like, oh, well, I guess this is the only type of person I know how to attract. But so many people that we've had on the show and that we've met through over the years of, you know, I can't even believe that I've been doing this 4 years. They have a similar story. They joined TikTok. They had a viral moment through fandom and they were exposed to this new world of virality. And I do think community as well, because I think also on TikTok during that time, there were a lot of people who were making Star Wars cool again and inviting anyone and everyone to share their voice. And I know, I mean, Brooke and I met because of communities like that, our friends over at Diet and the Force, you know, making Discord servers and inviting all of these fans to join them in discussions. We had a book club for a really long time. And that was, I think, the main way that we were connecting with people at a time where it was really hard to connect with people. But then, this is an interesting question. I want all of us to answer it. At what point for you guys did the hobby turn into, oh, wait a second, actually, this is more of a career. Oh, wait a second. Like, at what point did you realize that people were paying attention to what you were saying and that it held wait.
I think for us, I guess it was when we've hit our first big milestone, which is when we got 100,000 subscribers on YouTube and we got the plaque. And that was a pretty big moment for us. And just seeing our channel grow pretty steadily, you know, slowly but steadily since then, has been wild. But yeah, the hitting that 100,000 sub mark and then creating our Patreon too has been a big part of that. And like realizing, oh, but people want to support what we're doing here, and to the point where maybe we could make it better for everyone if we did it full time.
I don't know. Still don't know why people listen to me sometimes. I mean, yeah,
Go ahead. I was just gonna say, I think we all suffer from imposter syndrome because I certainly met influencers who know they're influencers, who carry themselves like they're influencers and don't carry themselves like they actually genuinely care about much more than the money that they're making. We're all fans. And so I think we all have that imposter syndrome sometimes. You know, I'm sure you guys do still, even with all your success. We're fans. Because you're not, I know for a fact that you're not, you know, staying up till sometimes 3 a.m. to watch shows because you need the check. Like, you're doing that because you love the show. You'd be doing that anyway. Just for you, Brooke, I know that just a couple weeks ago, there was a comment and they said, I would have never even considered playing The Last of Us if it weren't for Brooke's content. And I know you get comments like that all the time. So
those things are nice. So like, I have a smaller following by comparison. I had a mental breakdown this weekend about it. Because we all, you know, have those moments. And I recorded a video of me crying and kept it in my TikTok drafts. So I was like, maybe I'll post this to friends only. But then I like got all the words out and I was like, I feel a lot better now. No, but I think when I feel like special, like, oh, I have a voice, I guess, is when I, not necessarily when my friends tag me in things that they know I would like, but when I get like random people tag me in things or like send me stuff and I'm like, oh my god, I'm the first person you thought of when you saw this thing. That's crazy. Or like the comments, like, I played, you know, The Last of Us, or I watched this, or I read this because of your suggestion or influence, and I'm like, wow, okay, that's cool. So I mean, it's there no matter how big or small your platform is. And I think that's a thing that I have to remember, is it's also because there are plenty of, especially in like the TikTok sphere, there's plenty of creators that have like hundreds of thousands more followers than I do. But I have also made really valuable connections and friendships with people that have bigger platforms than I do. And because of that, I've gotten, I think, opportunities that even like bigger creators haven't received, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. I was going to say something similar, you know, especially on TikTok. I mean, the numbers are just, it's just not the same. I don't know. Have you guys seen that too? Or is it like a steady stream?
TikTok has been weird for us because it was kind of our last thing that we...
Mm-hmm. I remember when you guys joined TikTok and you were like, oh.
Yeah. We did it because we were like, oh, YouTube Shorts is a thing now. It's so funny. Side note that we started the channel A Star Wars Minute, doing all of our videos a minute or less. And then YouTube is like, we want long form content. So then we switched to doing more long form content. And now they're like, we want short form content. Anyways. But yeah, TikTok was weird because I was like, I don't really know what to do here. Like, we've never done kind of just off the cuff videos that, you know, Alex does a lot of scripted stuff, and most of the stuff that I'm a part of is more improvised. But we really joined TikTok because we were doing YouTube Shorts, and I was like, I can just put these over here too, you know, like,
yeah.
So a lot of our stuff is kind of just shared because it's multi-platform.
I was going to say something similar to Brooke in the sense that when I started getting those comments, like, it was probably, it was right around the time that I started doing my Star Wars biology videos, which people ask me all the time when I'm going to bring them back. And I don't know. I don't know. That doesn't feed my soul anymore, unfortunately, the way that it used to. We can talk about that more in a second. But around that time is when I started to get comments like, oh, because that was right around when the High Republic was first starting, phase one. And I would get these comments like, oh, I just picked up Light of the Jedi because you said it was really good. And like, I'd be on a live stream and someone'd say, oh, like, I gave The Last Jedi another chance because you really like this movie. Like, so stuff like that is when I started to notice a shift. And, you know, I think we could all agree there's a certain level of ego that is required for continuing to make content in that way. I think we're all, I certainly have fallen victim to that a lot in my past. And I think, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think you should believe in your content and you should believe in the work that you put out into the world. And I think you get into trouble when you start making stuff just for views and just for, you know, because other people tell you to. But does anyone have any thoughts on that? Because that's kind of like a self-expose. But I think it's important and I think it's a huge part of this discussion.
Yeah. That is a big part of making sure that what you're doing is something that will last and stand the test of time. It's got to be something you enjoy. It can't be you just constantly chasing what's trending, because that's really, really draining, first of all. Mm-hmm. Second of all, people will most likely be able to tell if you're not really being genuine, you know, if you're just trying to chase whatever the hot topic is. So I think for longevity's sake, it is really important to kind of stick with what makes you happy and go from there, because people will enjoy it more, people will stick around and trust you if you do that.
Have there been times in your career where you have had a slump and like things have stopped inspiring you?
Oh yeah. I mean, anytime there's like not an active TV show or movie or game out, and if none of that is out and there's no books or anything out, we're like, what are we gonna do? And that's kind of when we started doing more live streams and doing older, you know, gaming streams and stuff like that. So there's so much in Star Wars to explore and make content about. And even if it's not like the hot new thing, you know, people out there are going to find it and be like, oh yeah, I remember that old book, or I remember this old game. Like, and it kind of plays on the nostalgia factor a little bit, and that's always fun. But yeah, there's been a lot of slumps where we're like, okay, well, money's tight and we'll just, you know, hunker down until whatever the next big show or movie is that's coming out. That'll be us, I guess, after Skeleton Crew, because we don't know when Andor season 2 is coming.
Oh, yeah.
So
I think I grapple a lot with when it comes to making content and things of like, either I'm trying too hard or I'm not trying hard enough. And I'm like, I don't know what is the balance. And it really does come down to like sharing and posting and talking about what inspires you and what's going to make you happy. I think if you say like, oh, it's not about the numbers, like you're lying. Like it is, there is some level of being conscious about how many views you're receiving or how much engagement you're receiving, or are you seeing growth in your followers, or if you're doing this as a career, a financial growth, or at least enough to live, you know? So that's been hard because we live in a society where our content is like instant gratification. We need it immediately. As soon as something drops, we're looking for the reaction videos or the recap like review videos, and that's not I don't have the energy for that. I love the people that do, because I love watching those types of videos, and like those are the videos that are going to get the most like rewarded the most. But it doesn't feel like, it's not something that I know that would be sustainable for me. And it's not something that I'm like super interested in. I've done some reaction videos for some things, but I also like just sitting down with my friends and family and like watching a show. And then I take a lot of time to process how I feel about something, which is why I like, we've been doing our Acolyte recaps after every 2 episodes. So we have like a lot of time to sit on them, and then I'll rewatch them either the night before or the day of when we record. And then I feel like I have so much more to say. Whereas if I were to go on right after I watch something and try to record how I felt about it, I would just be like, I don't know, it was really good. I liked it a lot.
It's interesting because TikTok is so popular now. I do feel like a lot of people are so fixated on like, yeah, what can I get out as soon as possible that will get that spike? But because we started on YouTube, we started out thinking, what has rewatchability? And I'm not like, I don't really watch reactions to begin with. I watch a few, but those, I don't think anyone's going back to rewatch anyone's reactions, you know, maybe, but if they're especially entertaining and funny. But yeah, reactions and recaps, they just don't have the rewatchability factor that I guess YouTube more so is kind of looking for. And yeah, TikTok is so much about instant gratification, sharing, like, hey, I saw this funny TikTok, and they're going to send it to their friends, you know. But then it's kind of, it's there and it's gone. So it's, I think, finding a balance between some stuff that you put out is yeah, I should do this now, get it out while it's hot. And then other stuff, you're like, okay, well, what's the rewatchability factor? And will anyone want to Google this and watch it at any time?
Yeah. But it also comes back to what we were saying about only making things that make you happy. And like, I definitely have moments in my content where if there is something pertinent that I feel like I need to say, like yesterday, I was like, I made a kind of funny tweet, and it was to the effect of, guys, nobody has uttered the word Sith in the Acolyte yet. Nobody. Because I knew it was timely. I knew it would do well. But I also had the words for it. You know, like I feel like I there are moments where I'm like, oh gosh, I really should be posting this right now because that's what everybody's talking about, but the words don't come. And you know, like I tried to make a personal review of the first two episodes of The Acolyte, and it didn't do well because I tried really hard to get how I was feeling out of, like about the show and the onset of the show, and I felt, oh well, you know, it's getting review bombed and this is ridiculous and there needs to be somebody saying, no wait, I actually really like this. And it didn't stick. And I was like, you know, because I felt like I had to rather than I wanted to. And the other part of what Brooke was saying, like I one thing I've always wanted to do that I haven't been able to dive into just because I don't have the right equipment or like the space, but I've always wanted to make, like I've always wanted to stream. And I got a PlayStation a couple years ago and I love that thing to death. And I've played a ton of games and a lot of them are things that I, you know, people have asked me to stream. I sometimes, you know, will dive off and away from Star Wars and talk about the games that I'm really enjoying. And people seem to really like that content and engage with it. But I recently learned that I'm autistic and I realized that 9 times out of 10, if I sat down to record myself reacting to something, or if I sat down to record myself filming a game or playing a game, most of what I'm feeling is going to be internal and it's not going to be expressed outwardly. So I wonder if that's even an avenue. Like it's definitely still something I want to try, but on the few times that I have, you know, filmed, when I've never done it with a camera on me. I've only done it like, I think you can stream through PlayStation directly, but I never knew what to say to the people watching. And so it's just like, you know, but
no, I will speak on like the streaming, because I have dabbled in my fair share of gaming and streaming over games. And I will say it's hard for me if I don't have an audience, it's hard for me to be playing and like constantly having a conversation I do have viewers and like questions and asking, like they're asking things and talking to you in the chat. It makes it a lot easier. And the good thing, even though TikTok has changed a lot, it's TikTok Shop. It's, I don't know, it's all of this stupid stuff now. They are really pushing for live streaming, especially game streams, because I find a lot of people streaming games on my For You page, and that's how I'll open them up and see that they've got a ton of viewers. In recent weeks, I've been playing through Red Dead Redemption 2. And I just put like first playthrough in the little description box. And so I get I get some people that come in and spoil the game for me. But I get a lot of people who come in are really excited because it's their favorite game ever. And they want to see someone experience it for the first time. And I am also someone who I like playing games, but I'm not good at them. So I love when I have people who can tell me where to go and what to do. So it is a lot about, I feel like any kind of live stream, it has to do with either the people, if you have like co-hosts or guests on your stream with you and you can facilitate a conversation, or if you have an audience that is interactive. Otherwise, it's like so draining for me. If I'm, you know, sitting there playing and I have like two viewers and no one is in the chat. And I know like sometimes that's going to happen because just when you're starting out, it's going to be slow, but it's not as fun for me than when I have like an actual audience.
Yeah,
that's
streaming
true.
is very interesting. Like the times that I've streamed by myself, because we're lucky that, you know, me and Alex have each other to talk to if there's not a bunch of people in the chat bringing up stuff to talk about. But there have been a lot of times where I've streamed playing a game by myself. It is very draining, and it is hard to, especially if you're playing a game for the first time, to concentrate on the game and pay attention to chat. You know, like a lot of times I would feel like I don't know how much I'm supposed to be interacting with chat, or do they just want to see me play the game? Like, it is a lot of back and forth, and it is kind of hard at first, but you do fall into a rhythm after doing it a couple of times, you know, like, especially over the pandemic, I got to a point where I was like, okay, I feel a little more comfortable doing this now. And yeah, a lot of people in chat were just like, just play the game. You don't have to talk to us, you know?
So, I know that we're all very fond of, usually, the Star Wars Twitter community and just engaging with the fandom as a whole, because we're all fans to start and we all genuinely care about the state of the fandom and the conversations that are being had within the community. And unfortunately, that has looked a little, I don't know if different's the right word, because this is definitely, the things we're seeing with the Acolyte are very consistent with things that we've seen in the past with Obi-Wan Kenobi and just the High Republic in general and the sequel trilogy and pretty much most modern Star Wars projects. But I would say that there has been a significant increase with the Acolyte, and it kind of sucks.
It really does. It's pretty depressing, especially for people like us who were in it every day. You know, this is part of what we do. Mm-hmm. This is part of our jobs. Like, people are always like, well, just don't look at it. And I was like, well, it is kind of part of what we're doing here. And I have to look at it. That is part of my job. So I can't just ignore it. But
even just to comment filter, you have to look at it, right?
Yeah. Like, it's just the sheer amount of people like chiming in to say how much they hate something is kind of shocking how much it's been for the Acolyte. And, you know, a lot of it is because it's a show that was created by a gay woman, and most of the lead people in the show are people of color. And that is depressing. That is so sad that is the main reason why it's getting bombed and so much hate. Like, people are just coming out of the woodwork to say, oh, I hate it because the writing's bad. No, you hate it because there's a lesbian, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is something that not only have we seen in the community, in comment sections, in certain people's, you know, certain videos we've seen, but that is also something everyone on this panel has experienced directly, just being a queer woman in the Star Wars fandom. That's what our comment section looks like when we're talking about how much we love the prequels. But for some reason, I know I saw a comment on Twitter from a account that we used to be mutuals, and they unfollowed me after I had some choice words about Gina Carano, which I will not apologize for. And you know, at the time it was just like, oh, we stand with her, we don't support this, whatever. And it done deal. Okay, we're not gonna follow each other anymore. But they went out of their way to say one of the most grotesque things I have ever seen a podcast say about Mother Anisea and Mother Coral being in a relationship and having children. And as much as I want to say this isn't new, it just feels louder. It feels like more people that perhaps think that and have not been emboldened to say so previously are all of a sudden coming out of the woodwork going, look at me, I hate gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's so sad that, sorry, I just wanted to add this one thing. I think the main reason why more and more people are doing that is because our politicians are doing it mm-hmm. on television, and it's gross. And that really sucks. So yeah, people are more emboldened for sure right now.
Yeah, it's just a combination of things, I think, because the types of things I'm seeing people saying is not necessarily new to Star Wars or to fandom, but especially Star Wars. But just in recent years, because of I don't want to have to, we don't have to get into it, but like we can't always separate our real life from fiction. There is overlap there, and we do live in a real world where things happen that influence people's opinions about everything, which is that's why everything's woke now, you know? Like, because there's a word for it now, because that's what's been become the thing in the media. But like, it is really sad, especially during Pride Month, you know, to get all of this shit, for lack of a better word, nicer word. And it's, I don't know, it's been really disappointing. I think there is a side of the fandom or a corner of the fandom that has been mostly positive and has enjoyed, like there are people that are there that are enjoying it and talking about how much they like it. And it's sad that it's being drowned out a little bit by a lot of the hate. And another thing that's frustrating to me is that, and I caught myself the other night when the last episode released, because I really loved episode 4. And then seeing, you know, friends of mine and other people that I follow or see on my feed often, offering like real criticism that is like good faith criticism of the episode or of the show so far. And I caught myself being like mad, because I'm just like, you know, we get so much hate on one side, I don't want to see it anywhere else. But that's also like, it's not fair, because we should be able to have healthy conversations and healthy discourse about things without it, you know, being correlated with the people that are hating on it just because they're bigots. Or like, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, yeah, it definitely does. And it's, I do have to catch myself sometimes, because I'll say things like, if someone says it's bad writing, it's just because they hate it because of the lesbians. That is not always the case. People can have constructive criticism. And like, there's a lot of people that watch our channel that are just like, yeah, I'm not loving the show because of XYZ. And that's it. Like, they're still watching a lot of the stuff about the show because they're curious, I guess. But it is possible to not like something and just be respectful and polite of, you know, what other people think. You don't have, if you don't like it, you don't have to make it everybody else's problem. You know, it's wild that earlier today I almost tweeted this, and I was like, this is stupid. What am I doing? I was like, if I'm eating spaghetti and it's like not my favorite spaghetti, it's pretty mid, but someone next to me at the restaurant is eating it and they're loving it, I'm not going to get up from my table and go over there and be like, tell me one good thing about the spaghetti.
I think you should tweet that, actually. I think that, you know,
That's how people treat
that's
each other on the internet and on Twitter especially. It's like, well, the sauce was bad. Okay, well, I'm enjoying it. Let me eat.
I think that's a really great analogy. And it's also, I mean, it kind of feels like it's common sense to all of us that you should not engage. We had a really interesting conversation with a journalist a couple of weeks back, and she was talking about the way, like, the different generations that are on the internet, and how the younger crowd, the, you know, kids who grew up with computers in their classroom from day one, they just kind of skipped a whole level of internet safety and internet etiquette that we all learned either, you know, like I had computers in high school, but that was it. And like I did all the safety, you know, oh, like, you know, I had the stranger danger, I had the be careful what you post on the internet because that could come back to haunt you. I had all of that, and a lot of people who are even just a couple years younger than me never had that. And I think we are seeing the aftermath of that. But then we're also seeing a bunch of people who are considerably older than all of us joining the conversation in that same way.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm thinking about it, maybe that's because they didn't have the internet at all until they were.
I think like millennials got, I don't want to say lucky is not the right word, but I feel like we grew up in a time where like we didn't have computers until we were like a little bit older. And then we did get, there was like, it was more of the height of the internet when it was more accessible for everyone. People started getting, you know, either computers in their house or laptops, like more accessible social media too. I think that and the rise of social media when, you know, millennial aged people are growing up, like we did get a lot of the, like, you know, don't talk to strangers on the internet, or it's like the, what is that show, To Catch a Predator, was like terrifying. It's like, oh my God, anyone you talk to could be a potentially 50-year-old pedophile. So mm-hmm. just be careful. And I don't know, there's
need
less
to
of
bring
that
back.
Yeah, there's less of that. And I don't know, there's something about, like, there's not a lot of education from generation to generation either. Like, I feel like the older generations, or like at least the millennials, are kind of trying to, are keeping very separate online mm-hmm. in these spaces than the younger generation. Partially, I think there's a lot of things where if there's, you know, you engage with any kind of discourse, and not everyone, but there are a lot of younger people that are like, oh, well, I'm a minor, so you can't say this to me. And it's like, it's very hostile, you know, it's not like mm-hmm. a, you know, we're all in this community together kind of deal. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like we could be teaching them stuff, but they like also don't want to learn.
Yeah, no, I totally agree that millennials, first of all, we're tired. we're just tired, period. But it's interesting because, yeah, a lot of millennials, we're having to teach the olds and the youngs how to use their computers.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so crazy that that's happening with like the middle generations right now. And I think there is something to that where, yeah, a lot of millennials or people around that age didn't have access to computers or the internet until like middle school, high school. And by then, you know, you had probably learned basic etiquette, you know, treat others the way you wanted to be treated, that kind of stuff. And I think we brought that into our online persona. But you have like iPad kids now who were given computers to soothe them, you know, as they were growing up, and it was kind of always there for them, and they think they own it. So yeah, they're gonna treat it like trash. So
it's so interesting because I mean, I guess I don't know. I happen to have like kind of a weird career that, you know, my internet skills has, or my content skills has made me like an interesting asset in the world of academia. And it's not, it's just kind of its own thing. But have most career paths dropped the whole, if it's on the internet, someone's going to find it thing? Because I feel like there have been a lot of times where I will see people's full names, full location, job title, and they will say the craziest things online. And no, like, is nobody afraid of that anymore?
I don't know. Like, I mean, every once in a while you'll hear about someone really saying something bad, and days later, you know, their job will put out a memo publicly and
yeah,
be like, this person
like
is no longer with the company.
But then, you know, it feels like those moments are the really viral moments that we hear about. and not like, this is happening in every corner of the internet. It's not just Star Wars. This is happening everywhere. And like you said, it's because of people in public offices saying whatever they think, you know, and not getting in trouble for that, at least not to any real consequence. But it's just very disheartening. And, you know, is that, does it, I guess on the subject of content, like, does that motivate you to make more content, or does that kind of put a damper on it a little bit?
I don't know. It's like you said, Brooke, you can try to encourage people to have more compassion online, but a lot of people are just not going to hear it, not going to listen to it. Maybe they'll learn one day, maybe not. But I still think, I mean, I do think it's worth it to encourage people to just treat people online like you would want to be treated, you know, like have that level of human compassion. Think about what that person's day might be like. You know, are they already having a shitty day? You don't know. Like, this could be the thing that really pushes them over the edge. So that is in my mind a lot of the times when I'm posting online. And yeah, I just wish people would post more things that are meant to uplift rather than tear down. Just because, you know, we need more of that.
Yeah. And I think it's a great segue into this other part of this whole conversation about, you know, when you, I was really stoked when you mentioned creative responsibility, when we were talking about what you wanted to focus on, because I think that this is a conversation I have tried to engage with other creator friends and people that I look up to, but also people that I am lucky enough to know on a personal level. And it's not always met, you know, I kind of enter this conversation a very specific way, expecting other people to meet that same energy. And that hasn't been my experience. I've had a lot of creator friends disagree with me or just flat out say, I'm just out of it totally. Like, I'm not touching it. And so, yeah, I would love for, since you brought it up, like, what does creator responsibility mean to you?
I mean, I think it means, like I was saying, it means encouraging people to not be jerks to each other, you know, just encouraging more compassion in the online space in general. And you can say it depends on the level of your fan base. If you have 10 followers, if you have 10,000, if you have 10 million, you know, some of it is that, but I feel like at every level, that should be something that you consider. Just,
yeah,
you know, that's just my opinion. I do understand that some people are like, it's out of my hands, I can't control what they're doing, you know. And sometimes that is true. Sometimes it sounds kind of like a cop out, where it's like, well, you know, you might be responsible for what your fans are doing. And if you say, I don't know, I can't control them, you know, you're just washing your hands of it. There are things you could do to help and improve the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I see this conversation a lot online, and I think it is very easy to hear that argument at first and go, oh yeah, that makes sense. I'm not going and stealing somebody's phone and sending a threat on their behalf. That's not what I'm doing. Oh yeah, it makes sense. Like, this person did not say, oh, I'm going to go, hey, everybody, go attack this person. That's okay. But something that struck me throughout this conversation is you mentioning that you have guys in your comments saying, or people in your comments saying, oh, you know, I'm not really vibing with the Acolyte. Like, I'm interested in learning about it, but it's just, it's not for me. I'm sure you also get some crappier statements than that.
Oh,
but
for
I
sure.
also feel like that's like, but if that's, if you're noticing that constructive criticism in your comments, I think that means that you've created a space where criticism is encouraged, but in a way that's tasteful, in a way that doesn't harm others. And I think that there is a role that we play as content creators in, you know, because you can, sure, I guess you can create content and turn your phone off and never look at the comments and never do anything but just post a video. But most of us, I think, do more than that, because we want to do more than that. We want to make an impact. And part of it is the ego a little bit. And, you know, when you're, when you have that kind of, like, it is power. It is. I feel that it is, you know, it's, are we changing laws? No. But there are people in our DMs thanking us for, get, like, you know, I lately I've been getting a lot of that, like, thank you for giving me a voice. I don't necessarily feel like I've done that, but if other people are giving me that power,
yeah,
not to be cliche, but with great power does come great responsibility. And at that point, if you're gonna, I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you receive those messages and you receive that feedback, you're presented with a choice at that moment. Are you gonna say, yes, you know, I am doing this with my content. I want to keep doing this with my content. And this is my community. Or are you going to say, I don't care about you and I don't care about the community and I'm not doing this for anybody but myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that can be a hard thing to, you know, it's not for everybody. I think anybody can create content, but not everybody can or should take on that role of like a community leader or an influencer, whatever you want to call it, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of energy. And like you said, it's like literally your job to look at the bad comments. You can't get away from that. So that can be a huge toll on your mental health.
Yeah.
I know my partner would certainly like it if I'd stopped using Twitter half the week. Just because he sees how awful I feel half the time when I say something I think I know is right, and all my comments are
just,
you're ugly, you're fat, you're stupid, your degree is fake, you know, like, blah, you know, it's
so much more than to, like, a lot of people who, like, aren't really online like what we do. A lot of people will say, well, you just need a thicker skin. And it's like, well, I have a pretty thick skin already. And it just, and a lot of it doesn't, I don't read those comments and I'm like, oh, maybe they're right. Maybe I am ugly. Maybe I am fat, blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's just the sheer amount of those kinds of comments that, it's not that it's getting to me. It's me realizing how terrible a lot of humanity is, and that just like existential crisis kind of like clouding my mind to the point where I have to just go lie down. You know, like sometimes it is that kind of day where you're like, are there any good people on the internet? I don't know. Like, not today. So it's difficult to have to see that stuff. And even if you don't have to look at it like I do, it can be hard on anyone. And oh, hi kitty. And
I knew this was a heavy conversation.
Oh. Another big part of it too is you don't know the age range of your audience. I mean, YouTube and insights can give you an idea, but not everyone is telling the truth on what age they're putting on there. YouTube profile or whatever. Mm-hmm. So chances are, you know, there's a lot of very young, very impressionable people watching your stuff. And I think it's smart to keep that in mind, because if someone's like first grade teacher is talking about how rude they were to a cashier. And they were like, they just did everything wrong. And I yelled at them and I did this, this, and this. Is that kid gonna like be mean to a cashier after that? Because their teacher were talking about, they were talking about it and they were like, oh, it's okay. Miss so-and-so did it, so it's okay for me to do. And that's scary.
Now she's playing with the mic. Potato. Can't play with my microphone.
I think as creators, we have a responsibility to help hold each other accountable for our words and our actions. And I think I understand, because of how to the extreme one way or the other things can be online, it can be very hard to find a middle ground where you are having a healthy discourse, or, you know, holding each other accountable in like a way that doesn't feel like you're being attacked. Because I know if you're, it's really hard to, if you say something and you have people, even if they're being nice and they're coming at you with like the right, like motives and the right, you know, they could be your friends, you can still feel like defensive over, you know, what you said. And it takes a lot of like self-reflection to admit that and to say, you know, you're right, I could do better. You know, I didn't think this all the way through what I said. And it's, I don't know, I feel like it's hard. And I'm gonna speak on it today because there was something that I myself responded to in what I thought was a healthy, constructive way of saying, hey, I think that the idea here is great, but we need to be doing more to be changing our community or pushing our community forward. And I totally understand the feeling of like, wow, this person's attacking me. I hope that's not, you know, that's not what I'm doing. That's not what I think a lot of us are doing to each other. And it's so hard with, you know, when there are extremes, when you are getting DMs, you know, with threats on your life, threats on your pet's life, threats on your kids, like all of these crazy things, it's hard to filter those out and to know when someone is like coming from a good place and when they're not. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a solution to balance that in this day and age, just not even just in the Star Wars fandom, but just in any social internet corner.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it takes a lot of courage to be able to do that, especially when it comes to people that are your friends. I think, you know, I want to say there is, you know, there, nothing is worse than the bigotry and the hatred side of the fandom. Like, I want to make that clear. But there is sometimes challenges with the overly positive side of the community as well, because there are times when that side of the community ignores real issues or chooses to say, oh, well, we're so positive, you know, we can speak over it, we can ignore those people. And that's not always enough. Sometimes there's like more that we can do. And I don't know, it's like hard to find that balance in the middle. So I understand like the sentiment of being this like overly positive person all the time because of how negative things can get. But I think there's still space for happy medium.
Yeah. Hopefully. I think there's a healthy balance. And I think that this is a really, it does play a huge role in this conversation about responsibility, especially because of just how many of us are content creators. Like you were saying earlier, Molly, it used to be a very small fraction of people who use the internet. And now it seems like everyone is making content. And that doesn't necessarily make everyone, you know, like I said, it's a choice. You don't have to go into this. You don't have to make more of a career out of it. But we all have a lot of friends who do. And I think that that's something, frankly, part of the reason that I stopped being passionate about those, like, yes, I'm very grateful for all of the attention that my biology videos got. I'm very thankful for the opportunities it led me to. And I'm very, you know, I look back fondly on that content. But when I was making that kind of content, I was kind of disingenuous with the way that I was engaging with my community. I noticed that I really, and I still struggle with watching numbers, watching follower counts. Like, I still struggle with that. And I think I probably always will struggle with that. But back then, it was like, you know, a paranoia. You know, is my video going to do well? What species should I use next? What photo of the species should I start with so that people will look at this video and go, oh, this is interesting? And also, what kinds of conversations am I having with my comments? Am I engaging in a welcoming kind of way, or am I meeting them with, oh, you're wrong about this and I'm going to correct you? And that's what I was doing 95% of the time. And it just didn't feel good anymore. Mm-hmm. And I realized, oh, wait a second. I feel like I'm associating with a lot of people like this, and it's not nice. Is it fun content? Sure. But it's like, you know what I mean? Like, there was a shift for me personally. I would say probably right after GCX in Orlando a couple years ago. I had just graduated college and I was making moves in my like real life job and stuff. And like, I moved to Chicago and all this stuff. And like, I had this moment where I was like, wait, actually, no, myself and all the people that I'm associating with are, we say we're like this positive community, but we're not treating each other with respect. We're not treating our communities with respect. And all of these people, thousands and thousands and thousands of people, look up to us. And we're not actually abiding by these things that we're saying. And
yeah,
and I think that, do I do the numbers that I used to? Nope. But I feel really good about where I'm at in my content. And I feel more inspired now that I have in years with this podcast, with doing this spelling bee, like just the amount of people that have reached out and said, I want to be a part of this and I want to lend my voice or my platform or merchandise, you know, I'll give you something to donate. Like, to me, if I like that's what feeds my soul now. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and I'm not a perfect person and I'm not a perfect creator and none of us are, but you know, it's my hope that creators will understand the influence that they have and the power they hold. And, you know, this is the way I always put it. If you can convince somebody to spend 30 hours on a book, that's a lot of power that you could be using differently. Not that convincing someone to buy a book is a bad thing at all. I'm thrilled that more and more people are getting into the High Republic and reading Star Wars books. But you know what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the term influencer is like such a weird term. It's very new. You know, it wasn't a thing really just 10, 12, 15 years ago. I mean, it was, but not the way that it is now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, it comes up a lot with big, big, big celebrities like the Kardashians and stuff. It's like,
yeah,
if you are talking about diet pills on your Instagram, think of the millions of young girls who watch your content who are now going to want diet pills, you know, like that's a big thing. And even if you're a very small content creator, there's still a chance that whatever it is that you're talking about or recommending, you know, just think about it a little bit. And it, I did want to say to what you were talking about like the overly positive side, it can be easy to make the whole positive fan, like to make it your whole personality. And that eventually starts to come off as a little disingenuous at times. So it's kind of like, well, I'm happy that more and more people are talking about it and just like keeping it relevant, keeping the conversation relevant, but just do it. Don't talk about it. Just do it. You know, just be nice and spread compassion, and you don't have to make it your whole personality.
Yeah, it's almost like at a certain point, like, listen, I'm easy to please. We both kind of are. We talk about this a lot. Like, Star Wars, in a lot of cases, is a popcorn flick. You know, like, I'm happy to. It can also be very insightful and political, and you can have a lot of deep analysis. But if you want to enjoy Star Wars as a popcorn flick, totally can. And I am very content to go to the theater or turn on Disney Plus and watch cool lightsabers and cool, phenomenal acting, and be like, wow, I loved watching that for 40 minutes of my day. I look forward to that. I don't ever go into a new show or a new film expecting to love it more than anything I've ever loved in my life. And I never anticipate that I'm not going to like it. And I don't know if that mentality is what helps me, or just the fact that I just am pretty easygoing when it comes. But like, if you're generally positive about Star Wars or about Marvel or about literally any franchise or anything, you don't need to always say it.
You can just announce it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The thing that I'm seeing a lot of right now that is kind of, I'm not engaging with these people and being like, why are you saying this? But I do see a lot of people say that the writing for something, the writing is bad, the acting is bad, the directing is bad. And I just, part of me really wants to be like, what's your film experience? Or do you, you know, have you taken any classes on directing or writing? And like, you know, it's that kind of thing where a lot of times when a show like The Acolyte is getting review bombed, there's so many people online that are just copy pasting what they see other people say. And then that just spreads like wildfire, and it becomes like a bunch of parrots online. Like, I heard this person say this, so I'm going to say it too. And it's like, okay, well, can I ask what about the writing is bad? You know, like, and I don't want to do that with every one of those comments, but it does come into my mind a lot. And that is one thing that kind of bugs me.
It's tough too with like, I saw it firsthand watching The Last Jedi. I went with a couple of friends and we all walked out. We all walked out saying, whoa, that was fucking amazing. That was so good. And it wasn't until like 3 days later that one of them started just saying all of the talking points of why it was bad, Luke Skywalker was ruined. And it's like, because I know you went online and you saw what other people were saying, and that changes your opinion about something. And it's harder now with all of this Disney Plus content, because you are getting people's opinions in real time while you're watching it. So you don't even get to form your own opinion about something if you're constantly searching for that like confirmation bias of this thing is going to be bad. So I'm going to look for other people that are saying it's bad, and therefore I am now justified in my feelings. But it's like, really, you're not, because you didn't put the phone down long enough to just sit and enjoy something and see how you felt about it yourself. And that's like, you know, it's bad, the movies too, because it's just, it's Star Wars. But I feel like it's just, it's instantaneous now with the shows.
Yeah, and I think that a large part of like, if you have a content creator that you're going to frequently and you've established trust with, like, you're gonna feed into that, whatever, you know. I don't want to say that these people aren't capable of forming their own opinions, because they totally are. It's just that we've established this level of like, oh, well, my favorite creator said it sucked, so I'm just not gonna watch it. Mm-hmm. And I got a ton of comments on that video that I made, that Accolade review I did. The few comments I did get were all like, you have to be sarcastic. This is sarcastic. Every other creator I've watched hated this. So you're clearly being sarcastic. And it's like, what happened to what happened to opinions? I don't know. It's like, you know,
what happened to nuance? You know, like, everyone can have their own opinion. And yeah, the way that online content works nowadays, a lot of it is just like, gimme, 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 instant gratification. I saw this movie. I'm going to immediately Google it and watch the first YouTube video that comes up. And that's my opinion. That's just like, people sometimes want to just be spoon-fed what to think about stuff. And it might not be as simple as that, but it's what it feels like, right? It's mm-hmm. what it feels like a lot of the times now, where people just want to be told how to feel. And that could be a bigger issue, you know, just with people. I don't know.
You know what? Well, I think we should focus on more sometimes? The memes. When we watch stuff. And this is just reminding me with House of the Dragon back, like, my favorite part about watching Game of Thrones was like the live tweets, like seeing people tweeting about it, but not like tweeting about, oh, this is terrible, or their opinions, just tweeting the first like meme that they could think of. And it's mm-hmm. the funniest shit. And it's happening again with House of the Dragon. And I do see it happen with the Acolyte and some Star Wars things as well. We get the Yard Horde. It's a whole meme that's just blown up, and it's amazing.
But no, I mean, seriously though, like the community engagement and the Yard Horde, like, it, that was so refreshing. Mm-hmm. And not just because the critiques, or not critiques, but like bigotry has been so elevated with this new show, but I feel like it's been a long time since the Star Wars community has had, I mean, obviously there's the prequel memes, and everybody knows the prequel memes, but I feel like it's been a while since we've had a meme blow up like that in the Star Wars community, mm-hmm. and have it, you know, reach every corner of the internet in 24 hours, to the point where Daphne Keene immediately put it on her Instagram story. Like, that was fun! And yeah, it's silly, but like, we all participated in it, and we all, you know, and then Star Wars was participating in it, and then the stickers were made, and it's just, that felt like, it was just fun. It was just fun.
I will say, I think some, like, one of the best things that has come out of the Star Wars community in recent years is the Star Wars, like, official account becoming more active and engaging with the fans. I think before that, a lot of fans, including myself, would see like the Marvel fandom, for example. Like, we started to see when those Disney Plus shows come out, like, oh, there's creators that are Marvel creators or influencers that are getting invited to these premieres. It's so cool. And it felt like they had a little bit more support from the actual people that are making the things. And it just felt a little like isolating, because Star Wars, you know, they still had social media. They were posting promos for new stuff, but it wasn't until like Swagman came in and started replying to tweets and interacting like firsthand with the fandom that it felt a little bit like, wow, we are, you know, we are getting noticed, or people are actually paying attention to what we're saying and enjoying what we're talking about. And obviously, like, the Star Wars official account is not going to engage with those super negative things. We did get some, at least when like Kenobi came out, we did get a little bit from the official accounts, you know, denouncing racism and things like that. I think it would be nice to see a little bit more of that in recent weeks too, but just, I like the community engagement. It has felt a little bit more like solidifying than it's felt in the past.
Yeah, I think just knowing personally some of the people that work behind the scenes doing that stuff and getting to talk to them over the years, it's been really cool seeing them say stuff like, yeah, we are to the point now where our team is big enough and, you know, the higher ups have given us permission to do this stuff. And I, especially with a show like Acolyte, which had a huge marketing budget because mm-hmm. it's a brand new story. So they were really given the go ahead to, you know, send out those boxes and do the Yordhorde stickers and be more engaging online. And it has been really nice. And I think they're seeing just how important that is, which, you know, they've, a lot of those people who work in those jobs have been dying to do this kind of stuff and just haven't had permission to until recently, but it's been working well. I think they are like, okay, this is going well for us. We should keep doing this.
But yes, we love Swagman and we love all the people that work hard to do community engagement because they're the best. And I think it.
And if you think your comments are bad, think about them and what they have to see.
Honestly.
Yeah,
but I do think they're
therapy.
Yeah, that. But I also think there is something to be said about the fact that we haven't really seen, we've seen a little bit, like we did see Kathleen Kennedy speak on misogyny in the fandom. I do think that Disney and Lucasfilm could be doing more to protect their employees mm-hmm. and especially, you know, Leslie and Amandla and everyone involved with the Acolyte. Like, you know, they did a kind of with Moses Ingram when that was going on with Obi-Wan Kenobi, but because this is a conversation about responsibility and accountability, I would not feel right not saying that because.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know. You're totally right. And, you know, just I remember telling people who don't follow any of the Star Wars stuff online that Ewan McGregor put out a video talking about Moses Ingram and denouncing racism. Like, that is the bare minimum to expect from people, not to be so racist. And my friends were like, what? What is going on over there? You know? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's crazy that kind of thing even needed to be done. But with how rampant, you know, all that stuff is on the internet, it is a conversation that I think should be had. And maybe they need to, you know, dedicate a whole separate team for that kind of thing. Like, yeah. I know that that's costing a lot of more money and it's affecting so many levels mm-hmm. business-wise, but it's become something that I think should be talked about.
Yeah. I mean, as talented as Amandla is in all facets, they should not have needed to write, direct, and act in a music video in the span of 72 hours to protect herself. Like, that's
mm-hmm. yeah,
awesome that they were able to do that, but
yeah. Using their creativity elsewhere, you know, they shouldn't have to exactly. dedicate that kind of time to being like, why are y'all taking this interview from 7 years ago and turning it into Star Wars drama? Is that right?
Yeah.
But anyway, I think this has been a very enlightening conversation, a bit of a heavy one, but an important one. And I'm glad we were here to have it.
Yeah, it's been, Molly, it's been therapeutic.
So yes. Very cathartic, very like, oh, okay, we needed to get that out. But yes, Molly, thank you so much for joining us. And I would love it if you came back for another episode where we talk about something fun sometime.
Of course. Yeah. I do want to, I guess I don't want to end it on the super depressing note, but I will say this just to close us out. Like, a lot of people like to say, oh, Star Wars fans are the worst. Of course, Star Wars fans are never happy, you know, blah, blah, blah. Star Wars fans are great. Star Wars fans are the best. I love being a part of this community. nine times out of 10, the vitriol that you see online, I don't know that I'm saying that those are Star Wars fans. You know, some of them might be, but when I think of the fandom, I think of like the people that we meet at Celebration and just like seeing people enjoy sharing what they love. You know, it's a good place. And mm-hmm. I always try to reiterate that because it's so easy to say, oh, Star Wars fans are the worst. And it's no, as the internet just is weird and bad sometimes.
Yeah. I always say like, go out into the world. Like Celebration is like the greatest place that I've ever gone. And I'm sure there are negative interactions that people have. I've never experienced like a negative interaction with anybody. And you know, any convention that I go to, I've cosplayed as Rey at different conventions. I never get anyone coming up to me saying, oh, she's not a real Skywalker, or you know, all the other things. I get people that are like, wow, I love your costume, that's great. You know, it's like, oh cool, Star Wars, I like Star Wars, that's awesome. Like it's such an echo chamber online that, you know, go experience it in the real world and you'll probably get a lot of like casual fans who are like, yeah, I like Star Wars. Star Wars mm-hmm. is cool. I like the movies. I watch The Mandalorian because I love Grogu, Baby Yoda, as they would say, probably. but yeah, so it's hard to perspective, I guess. It's hard to take yourself out of the screens on our phones and realize it's not always bad. It's not always terrible.
No, and you know what? I think that the Star Wars, we saw that this week. I think with the hello Star Wars Twitter, like mm-hmm. those introductions and the interactions, like the Yord Horde and everything like that. Really, by the time I got around to like making a video about it, it was not a video that was like, knock it off, guys. It was like, no, actually, I'm really proud to be a Star Wars fan, and I feel a lot of hope, and that's what this fandom is about, and that's what we should focus on, and stop platforming people who are not interested in that, because, like you said, are they really Star Wars fans? Like, that's, you know, that's the big picture, but thanks again, Molly. It was lovely talking to you, and
thank you for having me.
I will link everything down below, but of course it's Star Wars Explained.
Yeah, so it's at Star Wars Explained, and then mine is just at Molly Damon on Twitter and Molly Mander on Instagram.
And do you have any exciting things coming up you want to plug real quick?
I mean, we're just chugging away right now on our Acolyte coverage. The big thing that we're doing for that is our weekly Wednesday live streams, which hopefully you didn't watch this week's and you were at the Spelling Bee. So I just tune in next time, I guess.
Or if you have two screens, you can do both at the same time.
Put ours up in the background. Just mute ours and then watch the Spelling Bee.
Our running joke is that we can't end an episode. So, Brooke?
That's it, y'all. Until next time, we'll yap again soon. Good night.
Bye.
And that's it.